and the other from a world that demanded a warrior's determination. Seeing them side by side seemed so wrong. Andy couldn't look Valen in the eyes. It was too personal. She worried that if she did, he would see the rot she harbored within. He had seen her at her best and watched her fall. She couldn't possibly fathom what he would think of her now. The two men went to the plush chairs across from the couch. Mustering up her courage, she followed them to the sitting area. She allowed herself a glance at Valen. Beneath his green tunic, she could see he was frail, a mere shell of what he'd once been. Instead of paint-stained fingers, she saw bruises. Instead of eyes alight with curiosity, she saw dark circles that swallowed them whole. He looked as if he wanted to curl into himself the way he had when she and Dex had found him in his cell in Lunamare. What horrors had he lived through?
"Valen Cortaz," Alfie shuffled over, stopping before Valen to bow deeply. "I am Alfie, personal artificial life form intelligence emissary to General Cyprian Cortaz. It is my command to assist your father in returning his son home."
Valen inclined his head at Alfie. "My deepest apologies that you're programmed to work for my father." Alfie's unblinking eyes stared at Valen.
"I am detecting strong levels of distaste toward..."
"That'll be enough, Alfie," Dex interjected. "Why don't you go check on the ship repairs? Memory could probably use some company."
At the sound of Memory's name, Alfie's posture straightened.
"I find my gears are warming at an alarming rate. Excuse me."
He turned, seeming all too eager to spend some time alone with the ruined ship. His footsteps hastened as he left the living quarters. Andy wondered briefly if all AIs could feel emotion like Alfie did, or if it was purely some quirk of his programming.
"Alfie helped stabilize you when he got you out of Lunamare," Dex said, breaking the silence as he propped his boots up on the table.
"Now that he's gone, how about we have a completely calm, completely adult conversation?"
He raised his dark brows at Andy. It was an effort to force herself to speak. Andy knew she didn't have a choice. Whether she liked it or not, she was the captain of this hellish mission. She'd allowed her pilot to fly her ship to the Olen system. And even if they weren't on the Marauder, it was still her game to play, her move to make. Valen had always been a gentle soul, but things could have changed. He'd been a prisoner to Lunamare, on enemy ground, tortured to the point of death. Now that he was awake, she had to make sure her crew were safe in his presence. She couldn't believe she was about to do this, but they had to get him to talk. She took a deep breath. "Hello, Valen."
Chapter 52 Valen. At the sound of her voice, Valen froze. Everyone did, as if they were watching the single moment in time before an explosion rocked the world. He could feel more than hear the sound get sucked from the room, and suddenly the silence was more than he could bear. Her eyes were locked on him, burning a hole into his skin. She was just as he remembered, and yet somehow different, all at once. And it wasn't just the metallic plates that shone from her cheekbones. It was something deeper. Her pale hair was braided back from her face, instead of the loose way she used to wear it. She'd added streaks of purple, a color that somehow brought out her eyes. Her skin was covered in cuts and bruises, but beneath it all, there was still that horrible, destructive beauty she'd always had. She had been lethal then, and was something entirely more dangerous now. While everyone else lounged on the plush seats, Androma stood. They all wore colorful, loose clothing, but she remained in a fitted bodysuit, reinforced in places with what looked like hardened armor. She was the ice to her crew's warm demeanor, and she was staring right at him, unafraid. He stared back. 10 seconds. Dex said suddenly from Valen's left. Every head swung to look at the bounty hunter.
"It gives me hope," Dex said,
smiling sideways in a way that Valen took to be his trademark grin. That Valen may not try to murder Androma as I had previously expected. He held a hand out to the giantess sitting across from him. "Pay up." Andy's jaw dropped, and she swiveled to glare at the new Vedan.
"You made a bet on this, Breck?"
The young woman, who Valen assumed was Breck, looked down at her toes and grinned sheepishly. "Sorry, Andy. You know I can't resist a good wager." She reached into her pocket, pulled out a few golden crevs, and slapped them into Dex's waiting hand.
"I'm beginning to think you two are becoming friends," Andy said.
Breck's cheeks reddened. Dex chuckled as he pocketed his new crevs. A moment passed in awkward silence before Dex turned back to Valen. He guessed it was his turn to be the show now. "So, my newly freed friend," Dex said, "it's time for you to talk. What did they do to you in there?"
"Dex!"
Andy hissed. She turned to Valen, her jaw working slightly back and forth.
"What Dextro means is..."
"Why are you here?"
Valen blurted out. She paused mid-sentence, her mouth half open, her gray eyes suddenly wide. For a strange moment, Valen almost thought she'd turn and run. But that didn't seem like the Androma he once knew, a specter who'd guarded his sister without fear, and certainly not like the young woman who'd rescued him from Lunamere. He still didn't know how many guards she and Dex had dispatched in order to set him free, or how they'd even made it inside in the first place.
"Your father hired me and my crew," Andy explained matter-of-factly.
"I know that. Dex told me on the way over here,"
Valen said, closing his eyes and shaking his head, still shocked that he'd opened up a line of communication with this murderess.
"What I want to know, Androma, is why you?"
She stared at him. Her crew stared at them both. The little girl's strange creature purred from her lap, the only rescue from the world's most uncomfortable silence. But Valen refused to break it until Andy answered him. She owed him this much, even if she had already saved his life.
"It's been a long time since we've seen each other,"
Andy finally said. She spoke to him gently, as if he were a child who might burst into an angry fit. It made his insides roil.
"Things have changed since then."
She took another deep breath.
"I have changed."
Back when Valen had known her, she hadn't just been a trained shadow who was meant to protect Kaylee and failed. She'd also been a dancer who moved like the music was part of her soul. She'd laughed so hard her voice could be heard throughout the halls of Avaria. She'd been alive. Now she was a young woman with scars on her arms and fire burning in her eyes. She looked like she hadn't stopped running since she'd escaped Arcadius.
"You're a killer, Andy," Valen said.
He had to say it. For himself. For Kaylee.
"As far as I can tell, you haven't changed a bit."
He expected her to cringe, but she took it like someone who was used to taking hits.
"What happened was a mistake," Andy said.
This time her voice was raw.
"What happened was..."
"Why did my father choose you to rescue me? With all the decorated soldiers in the galaxy!"
Valen inclined his head toward Dex, who bore the marks of a Tenebran guardian.
"He picked a traitor. A runaway. With all the other options he has available to him on Arcadius, why would he choose his daughter's murderer to be his son's savior?"
There it was. Out in the open like a bleeding wound.
"Because,"
Andy said, her voice bordering on cold, calculating fury.
"I'm the best one for the job, and because your father, as I fully expected him to do, threatened to throw me and my crew into prison if I didn't agree to the mission. We are the expendable ones in this galaxy, a part of it, but not. He could risk us getting caught."
That was the truth, Valen knew without question.
"As you should have been in the first place,"
he snapped.
And worse. Dex's jaw tensed. The young adherent woman placed a hand on the Tenebran's arm, as if holding him back. Or maybe, judging by the expression on her face, she was holding herself back, too. Valen glanced away in disbelief. He remembered the results of Andy's trial. Death. She'd been in holding for several days, ready for her sentence to be delivered. And then, somehow, against all odds, she'd escaped, fading into the night like smoke on the wind.
"It was a mistake," Andy said again. "If I could take it back..."
Valen gritted his teeth.
"Murder isn't a mistake."
"If I recall, you were the one who allowed your little sister and her friend to sneak out for a joyride on your father's brand-new transport,"
Andy replied. Her words were soft and casual, but her eyes were on fire.
"Spectre," Valen said. "Spectre first and always. You failed her as that."
"Again," Andy said. "It was a mistake. I've had to live with the cost of it."
"Kaylee didn't," Valen screamed. "She didn't get to live, Androma."
The world spun around him. He sucked in a breath, intent on staying in control. He would not lose this fight. She crossed her arms over her chest. Her face was impassive. Infuriating.
"What I want to know, Valen, is how the hell you were taken from Arcardius in the first place. The boundary is well protected. Your father's specters work around the clock, and then some. Yet he said you disappeared without a trace."
"Are you accusing me of something, Androma?"
She simply stared at him, fierce as a lioness.
"I was out walking in the gardens. After Kaylee was killed, things were a little tense at the estate, as I'm sure you can imagine."
She flinched at his words. "What happened next?" Dex asked, leaning forward, hands resting on his knees, drawing Valen's attention away from Andy. "It's important for us to know, Valen, so we can prevent it from happening again. So we can keep the families of the other system leaders safe."
Valen swallowed hard, recalling the events of that night. "A group of masked men came from the trees. I tried to run, but they surrounded me. I called out for help, but nobody was around to listen. And then they shot me with something," he said, pulling down his tunic to reveal a circular scar just above his collarbone. "The next thing I knew, I was lying in a transport ship, bound in chains."
He could still remember the fear that had spiked through him in that waking moment, the questions that had no answers until far later.
"We landed on Lunamere sometime later. I got one glimpse of the outside before they took us in. Then I was knocked out again. I woke up with my head shaved, my clothes gone, and my cheek pressed to the stones in my cell. Frozen to the stones," he thought to himself, "by tears I didn't remember crying. I was no longer a name," Valen continued. The anger had suddenly left his voice, replaced instead by a solemn whisper that made his throat ache. "I was a number. Cell 306. I don't know if minutes or hours or days passed before they came into my cell. And then it all started."
He realized he'd sunk back down onto the couch beside Dex, that he was shivering, despite the warmth of the room, that he was feeling the threat of darkness looming over him, despite the bright beam of moonlight pouring in through the open curtains.
"What started?" Dex asked. "You're safe here, Valen. You can talk to us." But he wasn't. Not with Andy here. She was looking at him like she used to, like he was a question she couldn't answer. He looked down at his hands as they clutched his knees. He'd grown so thin. He hadn't fully realized it until he looked at himself in the mirror today. He'd barely recognized the ghost staring back.
"The beatings," Valen said. The wounds on his back seemed to squirm in response to his words.
"They started slow at first. For every question I didn't answer, I got a single lash of the whip across my back. "What kind of questions?" Dex asked. Valen sighed. "About my father, mostly. What he did each day, what his schedule was like, who he spoke to, who came and went from our estate. At first I didn't answer. I was afraid what they'd do if I did. But eventually, Dex helped guide him along. "You have to understand," Valen said, now looking up. "They knew when I was lying. Maybe they had some sort of system, or perhaps it was just from years of torturing people for answers. They've turned pain into an art form. I had to tell them." "About what?" Dex pressed. Valen paused, growing frustrated as he remembered the interrogations. "None of it made any sense." "Can you elaborate? Can you give us any information you may have come across about Queen Noor?" Valen felt the change in his chest. Like something suddenly broke or slipped loose. He felt the rage unlock inside him. And this time, he didn't try to control it. He simply got up and left the group behind as quickly as he could.
Chapter 53 Androma. After Valen's abrupt departure from their quarters, Andy left her crew to prepare for Revalia while she tracked him down. She knew that being alone with him might not be the best idea, but she had to find him, make sure he was safe. He wasn't in his room. She'd scoured Alara's fortress, determined to find him. Everywhere she looked, from the many scattered balconies to the mountaintop temple, to the steaming, fragrant kitchens deep in the bedrock, she was met with wide-eyed workers with no recollection of seeing Valen. Even a little rusting sweeper droid, its arms replaced with dusty brooms, had simply turned away when she'd asked it about Valen, wheels squeaking as it disappeared around a corner.
"Thanks for the help," Andy muttered.
Valen was gone, disappeared without a trace. Andy's worries intensified. It wasn't that she cared about him, specifically. Clearly he didn't care a bit for the likes of her. It was that she knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that if the General got word she'd lost his son, he'd have her head. And every member of her crews as well. Valen was a prize worth thousands of crafts, a lifetime of freedom from the law, and all the mistakes she'd made as a specter. Fuming, Andy stomped her way down the twisting narrow halls in the carved-out mountain, heading downward to the ground-level exit. She quickly patched in a message to the girls' channels. "Going outside, still haven't found him, might need your help looking." Gilly's response was instantaneous. "Havoc plus me, on it." "She's not bringing that damned fuzzball on my ship," Andy muttered under her breath as she blinked the message away and slipped outside, walking past two sentinels stationed by the massive wooden exit doors. Adhira had taken on an entirely new shape in the darkness. She walked down the hillside, her boots leaving rocky mountain terrain behind, suddenly landing on the lush edges of Aramea. The terraformed quadrant was so odd, so beautiful. Massive tree trunks as large as buildings stood like sentries around her. The farther she walked, the more the undergrowth began to take over the ground. Strange, fern-like plants with jagged leaves, green melding into purple ends that gently swept across her calves. Andy looked up, craning her neck to see into the canopy. It was magnificent tonight, the sky like a painted ceiling, the wink of distant planets and moons glowing in otherworldly shades through the darkness. Every so often, a blazing ball of fire shot past overhead, a meteor falling through the sky. The air was comfortably cool, enough to fill her chest with a spark of life, and when the wind blew, the leaves on the trees seemed to whisper overhead, then tumbled down like a colorful rain, twisting and dancing as they neared the ground. Andy felt herself relaxing as another meteor shimmered past and faded behind the treetops. It was the perfect view for a painter, were it not blocked by leaves the size of her head. At that thought, a hunch tugged at Andy's mind. Valen would be somewhere with a full, unobstructed view of this. somewhere that made him feel closer to who he used to be, somewhere that made him feel closer to Kaylee. At the thought of her old friend and charge, a little pang snipped at Andy's gut. Footsteps sounded behind her, and Andy whirled, reaching for her swords. Lyra's twin brother stood there, bare-chested and beautiful, his blue eyes locked on hers.
"Exploring?" Lon asked. "The rainforest is dangerous after the sun goes down."
Andy lowered her arms and crossed them over her chest, her cuffs cool on her skin. "I'm not worried." Lon looked so much like Lyra that Andy felt herself staring.
"You may be a skilled fighter in the skies, but this is Adhira."
Andy sighed. "So you're here to escort me back to the mountain?" Lon shifted on his bare feet. Another thing he shared with Lyra, a hatred for the confinement of boots.
"I'm actually here to help you. I saw where he went."
"Yeah?" Andy ran her fingertips across a fern leaf. It shivered and curled inward, away from her touch, as if it were sentient. "Nobody else saw him pass by. It's like no one pays attention around here. They go about their lives, gliding about, smiling like everything is always okay."
"Maybe you should spend a little more time on Adhira," Lon said.
Then he chuckled when Andy scowled at him.
"I see where Lyra learned that expression."
"She's learned a lot of things on my ship."
"Like how to lose control of her emotions and nearly die while crash-landing a glass starship?" Lon asked.
His words weren't acidic. They simply were.
"It's Ferillium," Andy said, "something you would know if you took any interest in Lyra's passions."
She sighed. "I don't have time to argue about Lyra. If you would excuse me, I have a general's lost son to recover." She turned, heading into the sea of ferns without a word, happy to leave him behind. But Lon was soon at her side again, silent on his feet as he said,
"Not that way. Follow me."
He headed off into the darkness, and Andy followed reluctantly, yet she was also grateful to have a guide, even if he did seem to have a grudge against Andy and the girls.
"There's something strange about him," Lon said as he held aside
a massive spiked plant so Andy could pass unscathed. Behind it, a trampled path led deeper into the trees.
"Something I don't quite like, especially since he's been on a ship with my sister."
"Lyra is capable of defending herself," Andy said. "She loves what she does, you know, and we love her, too. We're a family, all of us on the Marauder."
"Family?"
Lon asked, a bit of heat creeping into his voice.
"Has she spoken to you about what her real family, what my aunt, has planned for her?"
"No one plans anything for Lyra," Andy said. "You and Alara shouldn't either." Lon sighed.
"So she hasn't told you, then?"
For an adherent, he sure was making a valiant effort at getting under her skin. "She'll speak to me about it when she's ready."
"And if you don't like what she has to tell you?"
He pointed a long finger ahead.
"Take a left here."
They followed a fork in the path, heading deeper into the rainforest. Andy mulled this over in her mind. What is that supposed to mean?
"I'm not here to anger you, Androma," Lon said, stepping over a small stream that ran through the path. "I'm simply making sure that when my sister speaks to you about her conversation with my aunt, you'll help Lyra see what is best for her."
Andy stiffened. Whatever Lyra had debated sharing with the girls earlier, it was deep. Enough to make her pilot sad in a way Andy had never seen. Enough to make her hide her words when Andy had offered her a chance to share them openly. Was she going to leave the crew?
No.
Andy refused to think it. Lyra would never leave the Marauders, especially not now.
"Whatever it is you're getting at, Lon," Andy said, stopping to face him, "I hope you know that I love Lyra as if she were my sister. Whatever she has to tell me, I will listen with an open mind and heart."
"And you will not try to sway her decision?"
Andy laughed at that.
"No one sways Lirana Mati."
He smiled at that, a look that again reminded Andy so much of her second.
"She's a great pilot," Andy said. "She loves her life up there in the stars."
Lon nodded.
"That's what I'm afraid of."
He stared ahead at the path as it curved again.
"Go a bit farther. Valin is up ahead at the stream."
"Thank you."
"I will be here waiting should you need assistance."
He lifted a shoulder in a half-shrug. Lyra's orders.
Of course.
Andy walked down the path that soon opened wide, revealing a clearing with a stream running through it, moonflowers blooming in the darkness, some of them glowing as if made of strands of sunlight. In the distance, Andy could hear the faint string music of a sumdrel floating in the wind from a nearby village. Revalia was already beginning, the start of a wild, carefree night. Andy scanned the clearing, eyes finally settling on a figure who sat alone on a large rock by the water. She practically slumped to the ground with relief. From here, he looked peaceful, as if he hadn't a care in all the world. He sat with his head bowed, his skin aglow from the flowers and a steady beam of moonlight that lit the water nearby. He was drawing something in the wet mud on the bank of the stream, his hands moving effortlessly as if the stick were a paintbrush, the mud a fresh canvas. Andy approached slowly, hoping for a glimpse of his art, but she didn't get to see what it was before he turned at the sound of her footsteps. His face was unreadable. "Andy," he said softly, "how did you find me?" She took another step forward, approaching him slowly. Half of her wanted him to keep spouting painful words, tearing at the scabs on her heart until they ripped open and the truth of the past bled out. The other half was relieved that he now seemed so much calmer in her presence. "A sentinel saw you leave," she said. "Thought I'd check in to see if you were all right." She paused, waiting for a response he didn't give. "We need to head back to Rymor." She started to turn, but he stopped her. "No, wait." His voice sounded pained, but then he swallowed and nodded. I need a few more minutes. It's been a while since I've seen the outside. In all the years they'd known each other, this was perhaps the only time they'd ever been alone. Andy was acutely aware of that as she slowly walked forward and settled down next to him, a full arm's length away. They sat in silence. The stream burbled cheerfully. Every few seconds, Andy heard the telltale swish of a tail flicking out of the water. She remembered with a sad smile the times she'd tried to catch fish with her bare hands on Olveca, how hopeless she'd felt, 10 times larger and stronger than any animal beneath the surface, yet still incapable of catching one to feed herself with. If Dex hadn't given her a meal, she might not be alive today. Valin shifted beside her, his clothing rustling, and she got a whiff of his scent. Not fresh paint, like she remembered, but not the rotten smell he'd had on Lunamare either. It was fresh and cool, like the air around them, like the strangely comfortable silence they shared. Who was going to speak first? She couldn't imagine it would be her, because what would she say? "I'm sorry I killed your sister." She noticed in her peripheral vision that Valin was drawing in the mud again. Peering over, she finally got a good look at what he was sketching. It was a woman, a crown atop her head and hair swaying in the phantom wind. "Who is she?" Andy asked. "No one." His voice was bored as he said it, and yet his eyes, so much more haunted than the eyes Andy remembered, did not look away from the image in the mud. The silence swept over them again. Andy tried to find a middle ground between the two of them, a safe topic to discuss. She knew he must hate her, but found herself wanting to mend the bridge between them and hoping he wouldn't try to jab that stick in her heart. "I remember your paintings," she offered. "Your mother used to hang them up all over the estate. My favorite was the one you painted of the waterfall falling off the gravel rocks." She could still picture the unique hues of green, blue, and yellow he'd used. The gravel rocks were Arcadius's most unique feature, large mounds of earth floating in thin air, as if they'd been magicked to stay aloft. Valin had managed to capture their beauty in a whole new way, making them even more captivating than they already were. "You were always so talented with art." "When I was locked up, I almost forgot what colors looked like," he said, lazily brushing the stick back and forth across the mud. "Did you know that black is more than just a single shade?" He turned and raised a brow at her, his eyes full of a meaning that Andy couldn't interpret. She shrugged. "It all looks the same to me." Valin leaned back onto his elbows, peering up at the night sky. There's a million colors up there, a million shades all mixed together. When you look at the world in more than just black and white, you begin to notice them. He sighed and shook his head. In Lunamare, I lost even that ability. She didn't know what to say, worried she might set him off if she dug too deep.
I hated you for a very long time, he said.
There it was. That pang of guilt again in her gut, and with it the sick satisfaction that she was finally getting what she deserved. She'd heard these words from General Cortaz and his wife, but never from Valin. After the accident, he'd never shown himself to her again.
You took away the most beautiful thing in my life, Valin whispered. Kaylee was the only person in my life who was true.
He swallowed hard, as if he had broken bits of glass in his throat.
I know that we have a bad past, Androma. There are things you did, choices you made, that I'm not sure I can ever forgive you for.
I don't expect you to, she said. He closed his eyes and breathed deep.
But I can never forgive myself, either, for being a part of those choices.
Andy kept her face calm, her body motionless, too afraid to reveal the shock she felt racing through her at his words. Her earlier accusation must have struck him deeply for Valin to say such things. She wanted to look into his eyes, to see her own pain mirrored there. Instead, she stared up at the starlit sky, waiting for him to continue. Valin shifted beside her again.
I could have stopped you that night. I should have stopped you. But instead, I stood there frozen, watching the two of you walk up that staircase without me. I blamed you for the longest time for killing her.
Another stab of pain in Andy's heart. Stupid, foolish, feeling thing. She wanted to tear it from her chest. In Lunamare, I had nothing to keep me company but my pain and my thoughts. I had lots of time to think about that night and everything leading up to it. Time to realize that we were raised in a society where perfection is the only option, but that doesn't mean it's always possible. We all made bad choices that night, not just you. She got on that transport herself, and I chose to stay behind. Andy wanted to speak, but she feared it would shatter this strange, heart-wrenching moment they had somehow found themselves in.
What I'm trying to say is I've held on to my hatred of you for too long, and while I can't ever truly forget what you did, I know that you didn't do it alone. We all had a hand in that night.
His shoulders bowed as he said the next words. Even Kaylee. She had never been sure if the God Stars were truly real, but right now, in this moment, she could almost feel their presence. A soft, calming sense that replaced the dread that had weighed her down since they'd rescued Valin.
I'm sorry, Andy whispered. That horrible, hellish pain in her chest returned, bubbling up into her throat.
She swallowed it down, forced herself to stay in control.
I knew I shouldn't take her. Several times I felt this little whisper telling me not to do it, but she was so insistent. I just wanted to make her happy on her birthday. Did you know your father hardly spoke to her that entire day?
Valin huffed out a breath.
My father, he said bitterly.
But that night, everything was perfect. We were having so much fun, and Kaylee was laughing, and it was the most beautiful evening, Valin. The stars were practically alive. And then the wind picked up, and I just lost control. She could still remember the empty sky before her. Then the lurching of the transport, the crash as the wing clipped the mountainside, the tumble down to the ground.
I wish I had died with her, Andy confessed.
I wish I had died too, Valin said. She nodded, staring out at the moonflowers, marveling at how they looked like little delicate flames dancing in the wind.
Without Kaylee, Andy began, finally voicing the realization she'd come to terms with these past few days. Without Kaylee, there wouldn't have been a sentence for me to run from. And without that running, I never would have found Dex. And without him,
you wouldn't be the Bloody Baroness, Valin finished for her. My father would not have hired you. It was a vicious cycle, one that Andy wished she could have undone before it had ever started. But it was her story, her life, and it was her burden to bear. "I'm sorry," she said again. "Truly sorry, Valen." "For everything," she thought, "even me." He didn't respond, but the expression on his face was a little lighter, the tension in his shoulders a little less. "We'll leave as soon as the ship is repaired," Andy said. "Then you'll be home." "Home?" He said it like a question. He must have felt like this was a dream, that the two of them had been stuck in a nightmare for the past 4 years. A breeze drifted through the trees, and with it the faint sound of music. "Do you want to go to the festival?" Andy asked hesitantly. Valen, after a moment, nodded his head. "I think I'd like that." They stood and walked a few paces apart from the rainforest's edge. Andy peered back up at the night sky. The darkness seemed a little lighter now, as if it wasn't entirely black after all.
Chapter 54 Lyra. Lyra stood at the base of Rymor, the cool kiss of the night air slowly dancing around her. She'd always loved it here in nights, the peace that came with each flicker of the stars far beyond the mountaintop. She closed her eyes and leaned her head back against the mountainside, relieved as Andy sent her and the girls a calm. "Found him. See you at Revalia." Lon had helped her find him then. Good. The two Arcadians could talk more, wade through their tangled webs, and hopefully enjoy the festival tonight. Revalia, Lyra thought, still in awe that they were here on Adhira at the same time as the festival. Though it looked as if she was going to be late to the festivities. Even on board the Marauder, with its limited supplies, Breck and Gilly took ages to prepare for social events. But here, with an entire planet full of beauty supplies they could get their hands on? "Your silent pacing will be our demise," Gilly had hissed at Lyra back in the girls' temporary quarters, right after she'd thrown a moss pillow at Lyra's face. "You heard the kid," Breck had said as she winked apologetically, slapped Lyra's behind, and shoved her out of the room. Lyra herself had left the mountain fortress in a simple sand-shaded dress and with a pair of twisting sandals on her feet. Now she was fairly certain that she'd be waiting here for her friends forever. But that was fine with her. She couldn't help but smile as she watched the continuous flow of people exiting Rymor. Each year Revalia took place in a different quadrant of the planet, the attire changing to suit the location. Tonight it would be in the sands of Bylay. Already, massive cargo wagons, pulled by albatrosks with their many curling and hissing tongues, were carting citizens from Rymor toward Bylay. In the moonlight overhead, Lyra could see the winged outlines of creatures from the rainforest taking their riders toward the desert. She could hear the distant tolling whine of sky whales soaring from the endless sea with hundreds on their backs. "I thought you weren't one for parties." Lyra glanced sideways as a warm arm sidled up against hers, and with it a familiar musky scent that reminded her of the mountain tunnels. "And I thought you were supposed to be guarding Andy," Lyra said to her brother. "She's fine out there. I have a feeling whatever creatures may come her way would be afraid of her." Lon grinned and crossed his arms. Though he wore a pair of loose black pants, the rest of him was bare. Muscles and a sculpted chest were out in full view of the people who passed by in their festival attire, some whispering or giggling to each other as they tried to catch Lon's eye. "And besides, every princess needs an escort to the ball. I figured, who better than your trustworthy protective brother?" Lyra gave him a glare worthy of Andy. "I'm not a princess." "Technically, you are," Lon said. Lyra rolled her eyes. "And this isn't a ball." She shoved away from the mountainside as two familiar forms finally came through the exit doors. Breck and Gilly, at last ready to take on the night and fully decked out in Adhira's best gowns. Lyra turned back to her twin. "And even if it were a ball, who says I'd want to attend on my brother's arm?" "Come on, little bug," Lon said in a wheedling tone. "I know you're desperate to perform the dance we learned for our efflorescence ceremony. If I remember correctly, those feet of yours could stomp for days." She laughed, recalling the countless hours of lessons, the horror of having to stand in public before hundreds of eyes and perform, with her brother of all people. How Andy used to dance for fun, Lyra would never understand. It was the torture of all tortures. A roar sounded in the night, followed by a series of hisses, as another transport wagon arrived, massive, towering wooden wheels squeaking as the Albatusk came to a stop. "That's our ride," Lon said. "Magnificent night, isn't it?" Lyra wasn't listening. She had turned back to watch Breck and Gilly emerge from the mountainside, looking so alive. Their faces were luminous with smiles and laughter. Gilly's hair was elegantly braided on top of her head, Breck's handiwork, no doubt, and Breck's eyes, the lids painted to look like a desert sunset, were completely mesmerizing. Revalia was a night for celebration, a time to lose oneself in the joy that came from being on a planet dedicated to harmonious peace. Lyra was home. Her brother was at her side. Her aunt had forgiven her, more or less, for the crash landing. She should feel as light as the wind that tickled her cheeks and tugged at her loose tan gown. She should feel as jubilant as everyone else around her. But as Lyra looked at Breck and Gilly racing toward her, and thought of Andy finally facing her demons when she'd confronted Valin, and when she'd spilled her thoughts to the girls about Dex, her heart fractured a little more. All she could think of was the image of the starship with her name above it, the promise that she could stay here and live a life where she was always meant to be. "Lear?" Lon asked. He pointed toward the transport, which was nearly full as everyone piled on. "Time to go." Lyra nodded. She tucked her arm into her brother's, then reached out the other to take Breck's hand as she and Gilly finally made it to them. "Ladies," Lon said, smiling at Breck and Gilly, "the desert awaits us." Together, the four of them walked to the transport, joining the crowd. Lon talked to Breck and Gilly, explaining how the festival would go, telling them how lucky they were to be here on Adhira's most exuberant night. All the while, even as they climbed onto the transport, even as the wheels began to move, as the pathway toward the sands of Bylay opened wide and Lyra could see far down the hillside the expanse of glittering red sand pocked with dancers already twirling in the firelight. All the while, her heart whispered, "You can't have two families." Her mind hissed, "You can't have two lives." She didn't know which she should choose. Her own flesh and blood, or the heart-deep bonds she'd formed with these girls over the past 3 years. The clock was ticking, moving toward a decision. If she rejected Alara's offer, it would never come again. "It's time to let loose," Breck said. "Lear, you look like you've just puked up a mound of moonchew." "Lyra doesn't puke," Gilly said. "That's ridiculous. Everyone pukes," Breck added. "I've never seen her do it. And I spy on her, like, all the time." Lon chuckled beside Lyra. "I see it," he whispered. "What draws you to this crew?" He lowered his voice even more. "Whatever you decide, Lyra, I will still love you." An explosion rocked the night. A trail of fire spread into the sky, illuminating it bright pink, sparkling like a falling star. "I do so love explosives," Gilly sighed, staring up as the rest of the show began. Lyra smiled, rolled back her shoulders, and shoved the choice she had to make down deep. She wouldn't decide tonight. Tomorrow, perhaps, she'd sit down with Andy and the girls, tell them what she'd been hiding. For now, she settled into the warmth of her brother on one side, Breck and Gilly on the other, and let the glittering sky call her forth into the promise of a perfect, thoughtless night.
Chapter 55 Dex If ever there was a time for Dextro Ares to drink his way into blissful oblivion, it was now. As he climbed down from the transport wagon, his boots landed on soft desert sand. He felt his face break into a grin that stretched from ear to ear. The sands of Bylett. Dex had been here before, shortly after he'd first met Andy. It was one of the first places they had traveled together. She'd helped him track down a target for Ryseth, his former boss and leader of the Bounty Hunters branch. They'd marveled at this planet's beauty and, later that night, celebrated their victory by drinking and dancing in a small village bar until morning. Spread across the sands of Bylett were towering spiral mounds of red rock, each large enough to house hundreds of citizens. Tonight, the geomounds had been transformed. Glowing adherent spirals were painted on their sides, and some had flags staked to the rock, waving in the wind. Hundreds of people twirled beneath them on the sand, their loose clothing dancing in the wind as their bodies moved in time with the music. The beat was alive in the firelight, hundreds of hands clapping at once whenever the stringed instruments rose to a sweet, piercing high note. On the edges of the festival, booths had been set up, and shopkeepers called out their wares to passersby. Colorful garb hung from the booths, fluttering in the wind. A flock of pure white birds soared from a cage, exploding into the sky as the crowd cheered below. Dex almost tripped over his boots as a pillar of orange flame suddenly spiraled high into the sky before him, then arced back down, where it disappeared into the waiting mouth of a fire breather from the endless sea, the green gills on her neck glowing as the fire shot out of the slits. She must have a hell of a time fire breathing underwater, Dex thought sarcastically. Beside her, a little round droid rolled around on the sand, collecting crevs from outstretched hands, depositing them into a waiting seashell the size of Dex's head. Dex passed a star reader, her stand draped in holographic sheets and wind chimes, their music mingling with the sounds of the festival. As he got closer to the center of the crowd, Dex could smell the mouth-watering scent of freshly cooked meat, likely coming from a booth where orange smoke trailed high into the sky. The shopkeeper, an Ulvacan man with four arms, quickly flipped slabs of meat into the air and slapped them back down onto a fiery table. A long line of patrons stood waiting, some with thick mugs of sweet jurum that swept its drinkers up into a warm, bubbling embrace. That, Dex thought, is exactly what I'm after. He looked back over his shoulder to where Andy's crew was making their way down from the top of the hill. Breck looked like a wonder in her gown. Gilly walked beside her in a dress of glittering purple that made her red braids shine bright as moon lava. She was already twirling in time with the music. Thank the god stars she'd left her furry horned demon behind in the mountain fortress with Alfie. Then there was the pilot. Her face was alight with a serene smile as she led the pack, walking as if she hadn't a care in the world. Lyra's twin brother glided along beside her, his muscular chest bared to the desert. For a moment, as Dex looked at them, he caught himself thinking, "There's my crew." Though he hadn't set out to, he'd bonded with the Marauders. Their personalities were magnetic. They each shone brightly in their own ways, and the thought of leaving them behind once this was all over suddenly saddened him. He looked back up the hillside just in time to see two figures crest the horizon. Dex actually stopped walking at the sight of them. Valin didn't look quite so off-putting as he had before. He was still atrophied and greasy, Dex noted, but there was a smile on his face. He looked more alive, transformed since Dex had last seen him shattering Andy's heart back in their living quarters. He was too moody, too strange. Dex reminded himself to keep a closer eye on him. But it was Andy who really caught Dex's attention. For one moment he saw her as the girl she used to be, standing on the hillside, staring at the world below. Not as if she wanted to burn it to a pile of ashes, but rather run down into it and celebrate everything life had to offer. Gone was her scowl, and with it the tight braid that made her look like she didn't have room to smile even if she'd wanted to. Instead, her hair fluttered in the wind like silvery purple ribbons, and though she still had on her tight black clothing, it showed off her curves in the moonlight. Dex couldn't help it. His body warmed, and suddenly he was imagining all the times they'd danced together in the past, the feel of her smooth skin beneath his hands, the heated words she'd whispered that sent shocks of electricity running through his every nerve, the press of her lips to his. "God's stars," Dex said to himself. These were thoughts that he had to shove deep down until they withered and died, just like his feelings for her. He had no right even thinking such things. Dex allowed himself one last glance at Andy and Valen, wondering about the moments they might have shared together in the darkness. He'd assumed, as everyone had, that the chasm between them could never close, but not for the first time since the start of the mission. Dex was surprised to find that he'd been wrong. He sighed and turned on his heel, his mouth watering for a taste of sweet liquid freedom that would whisk him away. Revalia had finally started. Now it was time for Dex to have a little fun.
Chapter 56 Androma. Something about the night had changed. Andy's feet felt lighter as she and Valen made their way toward the festival. It had been so long since she had last danced. Actually danced, not just imagined dancing with the dead during her times of remembrance. With the apology between her and Valen set free, it was time to allow herself some freedom, to let go and not be the bloody Baroness for one night, just a girl who stared up at the stars instead of captaining a pirate ship through them. Andy knew it was impossible to change things, to shed who she had become in the years past. But for right now, she didn't mind pretending she was someone she could never be. Tonight she would drink and dance to her heart's content, toss herself into a blissful oblivion and sink back into reality once Revalia was over. After all, it was the festival of victory against the Zentaran forces, and in a way, the crew deserved to celebrate their successful mission of freeing Valen from Queen Noor's clutches. Valen was safe, they were all alive and relatively well, and Alfie was probably still pining over memory, deep in the belly of Rymor. It was an added gift, seemingly from the Godstars above, that he wasn't present. As Andy reached the bottom of the hill, the crowd before her undulated, then parted like a tossing sea. She spotted her crew disappearing into the wave of vendors and music. At the back was Gilly, dancing on her toes as she followed Breck. Lyra led them, a smile lighting her features as she spoke to her twin brother, Lon. Where was Dex? Andy found herself searching for him, hoping she'd catch a glimpse of him in the crowd. They'd danced together on Adhira once before, in a drunken night that had left them both with plenty of hazy memories the next morning. She smiled, thinking of the memory, the laughter, the way their bodies had so perfectly intertwined. Stop, she told herself. A part of her wanted to find Dex, to speak to him and be near him, but she knew she shouldn't be searching for Dex, and she certainly shouldn't be thinking about him. He only complicated things. The two of them together were like Gris and Rigna, they just didn't mix well. Tonight was about forgetting Dex, and everything else from her past. And besides, Andy couldn't remember the last time she and her crew had had an outing this alive. The Marauders always worked under cover of darkness, hiding in the deepest parts of shadows so as not to be seen. Today, they'd be a part of the world and celebrate beneath the stars. She turned to Valen. Ready? For a moment, she wondered if he'd be able to handle the crowds, the noise, the press of bodies against each other on all sides. His eyes were darting over the scene with stunned excitement, as if he couldn't take it all in and wasn't sure if he really wanted to. I'm not sure how to... He nodded slowly, as if walking himself through his own words. How to do this? Andy stepped aside as a group of children sprinted between them, laughing and chasing a creature that looked similar to Gilly's bloodthirsty little beast. Well, we've attended plenty of military balls before, she said. It's just like that. Only better, because this time neither of us are bound to any duties. We can simply live. And how does one live,
Valen replied with an anxious glance at her. I seem to have forgotten. Andy shrugged. I guess we'll figure it out together. She led them into the bustling crowd. The smells of food, drinks, and perfumes assaulted her instantly, wrapping around her senses like a warm blanket. Seated on the red sand were shops selling patriotic flags of the unified systems, four lines running vertically under the galaxy's emblem, a spiral with a star sprouting from its center.
I haven't seen one of these in forever, Valen said.
He stopped and ran his hands across one of the flags, the purple and white colors a striking resemblance to Andy's hair.
Oh, they're all over the galaxy now, Andy said, especially in the last couple years, as people are growing more optimistic that Zentara won't ever retaliate again.
The peace treaty holds that hope in place, but their silence has also had a part in it. You must have missed that trend while you were... She trailed off, frowning.
It's all right, Valen said with a shrug. You can talk about my time away. It's as much a part of me as my scars are.
His eyes fell on Andy's wrists, where her sleeve had ridden up to reveal the marks left over from her accident with Kaylee. Even with her cuffs, they were still obvious. She reached to tug her sleeves down, wishing she could take the marks from her skin and hide any evidence that might break the strange peace she and Valen had found. Mercifully, he looked back to the flags hanging from the booth.
They deserve to be removed from this flag, he said suddenly, his voice acidic, and Andy assumed he was talking about Zentara. Millions of people died in that war.
The altered flag was a universal screw you to the entire Olen system, displayed on dashboards of starships, hung in windows, tattooed on the backs of old, wrinkled soldiers who had long since retired. The design on the flag had always been more or less the same, but when the unified systems won the war, what had once been five lines became four, signaling Olen's split from the unified systems. Andy was very young during the last year of the war, the worst of the fear having passed her by in her youth, and the sparkling, wealthy haze that Arcadius gave off. She didn't live in constant fear the way that many of the other planets had during the last days of the war. But she'd never forget the day the official removal of the Olen system was broadcasted across the galactic feeds, never forget the sound of her parents cheering instead of mourning when Olen was cast out. She'd never known life without Olen being a dark mark on the edges of Mirabel, an entire system that had exploded into acts of terror when the unified systems couldn't help them save their dying planet fast enough. Survival of the fittest had been a saying passed on since the time of the ancients, and there was so much truth behind those words. Olen wasn't fit, so they didn't survive. Andy believed Olen's act of war was a last, desperate attempt to get what they wanted. Sadly, it didn't turn out well for them. Even before the cataclysm, Zentara had been a weak planet, long bereft of resources. Now it was shattered, hanging on to life support as it faded away.
Let's go, Valen said. He turned away, casting a final scowl over his shoulder at the flags waving in the wind.
As they walked on, Andy let her mind sink into a calm state of observance. There was no goal here, no mission to accomplish, no reward on the line. For once, she could simply be. She stepped over two kids playing a board game in the dirt. One of them had scales like Lyra, which lit up brightly in a summertime yellow. Her friend, a muscular girl who looked a bit like Breck, giggled as they threw the dice at each other instead of playing the game. Such pure innocence made her smile, until she heard their voices a little more clearly.
You're the Zentaran! I'm the Arcadian Fleetmaster! I don't want to be the Zentaran! That means I'll lose!
A woman appeared from the tent behind the kids, telling them both not to speak of such an awful place on such a celebratory day. As the crowd swept forward, she allowed it to swallow them up, carrying the bad memories away. Before joining the dancers, Andy bought each of them a mug of Jurum. It was a famous drink on Atira that was said to make its drinker forget their troubles. It sounded too good to be true, but Andy had had plenty of experience with Jurum. "You sure about this?" Valen asked her, sniffing the glittering, bubbling liquid in his mug. Andy nodded.
"Yes, but don't drink as much as Lyra does. She's a bit of a pro when it comes to Jurum, actually."
She took a gulp. When the drink touched her tongue, the sickly sweet taste turned smooth like liquid heaven. The instant effects were blissful, and Andy welcomed them with open arms. Her vision was enhanced, everything more vibrant and alive than it had been seconds before, making the whole festival pop with color, as if she were looking through a kaleidoscope. The world became beautiful all around her, all darkness swept away. Valen took another sip from his